This episode is sponsored by Cards Against Humanity. They asked us not to read an ad. Enjoy!
It is the Chicagoverse podcast on the Dynasty Podcast Network, featuring interviews with Chicago's premier artists in industry and creatives and culture leaders. Hosted by Haima Black. Welcome to Chicago.
All right, Dynasty Podcast live from Dynasty HQ in Pilsen. Haima Black here for another week in a long, year-long streak of weeks. And I am here with a first-timer on the podcast here, Emily Blue. Thank you so much for coming up.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We were talking about a whole bunch of stuff on, before the mic was on, and there's a lot of really cool stuff to cover tonight with you. But I always kind of start at the beginning with these interviews. So what I would love to know, you know, just right off the bat to kind of set the tone here is just like, how did music start for you? Bring us into you starting as a musician, like, kind of tell us that story.
Okay. I'll have to shorten it quite a bit, so.
But feel free. I mean, it's a podcast, though, you know?
Yes. Let's see. So I started playing music when I was 5, and I took piano lessons. I learned flute when I was in middle school and high school, and I almost went to college for that, but then I decided it was too restrictive. The way that, you know, classical music is taught kind of killed my vibe a little bit.
So, okay.
And I started writing songs when I was 13, but I didn't really sing seriously until I was maybe 16 because I was too shy in that way. And then I joined a band called Terra Terra, or rather we created it as it went on, and then that band actually recently broke up. And here I am as myself, doing pop music, which is my heart and soul. So.
Okay, so that is the condensed version.
Yes.
When you're joining a band, because you kind of went from being, like, shy to, like, joining a band, like, how did you kind of overcome that apprehension or anxiety or whatever?
I was just so determined to write that it was just like a vessel to convey a message or my lyrics or whatever, but I wasn't very good at singing at first at all. There's a hilarious album that I made when I was 16 that I will never, ever let anyone hear. And I mean, it just shows like I had ideas and I was putting them together, but I just didn't have the sort of like muscle training for it yet.
Right.
And then I just plowed through it through years of kind of like condensed learning and vocal lessons and stuff like that. So
it's just like this incremental bit by bit process. And then so you form this band with friends, strangers?
Friends at the U of I, which is where I went to college. So
in
it
Champaign.
Was, yeah, Joey on drums and Nick on bass and Colin on guitar. And if you like look us up on the internet, you can see us all being nerds together, which is pretty fun.
So when you're in that environment, are you kind of getting out of your shell and becoming more comfortable? Are you like, is it reassuring having other collaborators in the mix?
I think it can go either way because sometimes when you rely on other people's opinion or validation for your ideas, or if you're collaborating, you definitely want them to approve of something.
Sure.
And then sometimes they don't. Sometimes they're like, I don't like that idea. And you're
right.
Like, oh, well, all right. what am I going to do with that then? I guess we can't use it.
Right.
It's sort of a give and take with that kind of band. But now that I'm more of a solo artist, I kind of pave my own path a little more.
Yeah.
That way. Yeah.
And when did the solo thing start? So you're in the band, and then when do you start to kind of be like, okay, like, this exists over here, and I'm going to start veering into my own space?
I started doing my solo project in the midst of being in that band because I had this album that I really wanted to record called Another Angry Woman.
Right.
And so that's out and everything, but yeah, it was a message that I thought that I could tell better alone rather
right.
than, especially since it has so much to do with gender and like my experiences, and the rest of the band was dudes that have never really gone through stuff like that. Then I just sort of made a name for myself with that album and stuck to it.
And when you released that, were you living in Champaign still or had you come to Chicago?
I was in Champaign, I believe, but there was this stage of my life where I kind of lived in Chicago and Champaign at the same time.
Okay.
I would Greyhound like every weekend here.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that just the worst or...
Yes, but it also was the best because So I moved to Chicago in the middle of my college process, like maybe, so I hadn't finished my degree yet, but I loved the music scene so much, and there were some things in Champaign that I wanted to get away from that I was here for, and then I decided to go back to school, but instead just, you know, flip-flop every week.
Okay. So you were living in two, like, and not like close cities. It's not like you were in, like, Evanston and Chicago, where it's just like a, like, 20-minute L ride.
Yeah.
How challenging was that to, like, you know, were there days where you're like, motherfucker, my phone charger is back in Champaign, you know, like.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I've gone through so many chargers.
I just feel like that would be, I mean, did that help your creative process, or was it taxing being in two environments?
Well, that's such a good question. I mean, the 3-hour Greyhound ride is really good for writing.
Okay.
I write a lot of songs in the car now. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll just be at the steering wheel and, like, beat on the steering wheel and sing to myself. That's how I write a lot of songs. And so I drive now back to Champaign, and sure. I do the same thing. But it was taxing in that I felt like I didn't really have a home.
Right.
Like, I'd get here and have two backpacks and just wait at a coffee shop until, like, a friend would, you know, allow me to come take a shower.
Like, on the couch.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, man. It's, see, and you're younger. You're in your 20s. I only mean younger than me. And it's like, when you're in your 20s, that kind of thing is, like, fun and romantic. And then, like, when you're in your 30s, you're like, I need a clean bed.
Yeah.
With, like, my own pillow.
Yeah.
And a shower with my own clothes. Like, you just become this, like people now are like, you ever going to go to Coachella? And I'm like, fuck no, I'm 35. Are you kidding me?
I'm like that, though, too. I feel like the moving all the time reached a breaking point recently, because I was moving, like, every 2 months.
Yeah.
It was, and, yeah, so I just moved again. and I was like, this is the last time I'm doing this, because as far as, you know, changing locations
right.
over and over, it just really takes a toll on your mental health.
Oh,
and
yeah.
that's a thing that I've been realizing is, like, I want a couch, or I want a bed, I want a shower that I can just...
A door that locks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My space. Right. And my roommates...
We all want MySpace
we
back.
We do. We want MySpace back. Facebook is dead.
Right. No, but absolutely. Like, having your own environment is absolutely crucial, for sure. All right, so you get to Chicago, you're recording, you release your first album, and then what's that process like? How are people receiving you as a solo artist? Did it take a long time to get on people's radar? Like, bring us into that era.
Well, with Another Angry Woman, I had so much community support because of what it was for. Like, the album sales go to Races, which is... oh my gosh, I wish I could remember what the acronym actually stands for. I haven't said this in so long. But it's basically a survivor support network and resource center in Champaign.
Okay.
So I had so much support in that way. And then in the No Pain music video, there's a bunch of, like, assault survivors that hold up signs and tell their stories and stuff. So it definitely had a bit of buzz either from me or from, you know, whatever else was involved. And then... the other music that I make with my friend Max, so Rico Acid and Blackberries, that had more of a slow burn kind of thing, because I feel like people were like, who is this? Like, in Chicago, because I'm brand new, basically.
Sure, but you know, what's nice about Chicago is that you can build a buzz if you are consistent in a relatively short time compared to, like, an L.A. or New York. It's like... it's not so big of a city that if you're grinding and you're playing shows and you're putting out music and you're active on social media and you're collaborating and blah, 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 like, people start to see that.
Yeah.
You know, and I've seen that you've already gotten some write-ups and stuff. So it's not like, you know, people aren't aware of who you are.
Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah. And so let's talk about the Rico Acid video, because that is cool. Like, if you're watching this right now, after the interview with Drea, Vibe Dealer, who's up next, is over, Google the Rico Acid Emily Blue video. It'll be very easy to find, and it's really visually interesting. So bring us into that video and talk about kind of that as a project.
That was the coolest, most fun thing I think that I have out recently, because I had never... artistically directed a video. Brandon Holmes and I had a very collaborative approach to it, so he is a genius with, like, camera angles and editing. Like, his editing that's why I was drawn to his work. I was like, hey, man, we got to make something.
It's really professionally well produced.
Thank you.
It does not look like an amateur video. And look, there's nothing wrong with being an indie artist and having an amateur video. That thing is not that, though. You know, it feels very, like, it looks like one of these shorts you'd see on, like, Vimeo or at, like, you know, some cool part of South by Southwest or something like that. You know, like, it looks professional.
Thank you. We shot it in my friend's photography studio.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, there's some studios for video that are really expansive in the color backgrounds, but we only had, like, this much space, really,
right,
to shoot the whole thing in. So we had to be kind of creative with how we played with that space. I placed the girls and I in, like, different formations symmetrically, and mm-hmm. I had all these outfit changes and props that I brought pretty much, like, last minute. I stole my neighbor's flowers, I'm sorry, for the fern-waving scenes.
Yeah.
But I was like, ooh, this would be amazing, and it ended up being cool. Like, you know, you have that idea in your head, and you're like, I gotta do it.
So how close is the actual video to the concept you had in your head?
Pretty accurate, which I'm really happy with, because a lot of times it doesn't turn out like that, you know?
And that was your first time directing a video concept?
Yeah, I would say that I, like, artistically directed. I did the art direction, so the styling and the colors that we chose, we were like, ooh, let's do blue on this side and pink for the lighting. And
blue and pink is just, like, you can't lose with blue and pink.
It's amazing. It's my favorite.
Yeah. I mean, there's been some great tweets, like, where, you know, they're talking about how this is the year of, like, kind of, like, blue and, or, like, the last couple of years in cinema have been, like, a lot of blue and violet hues, whether it's, like, Neon Demon or John Wick or Logan, but, like, it's just, man, you throw, like, kind of, like, bluish violet, like, violet or pink and blue.
Everyone looks hot in that lighting.
Yeah.
Everyone. It's awesome.
There you go. I'm
like, boom.
I think we need that, like, I'm going to put that lighting in here and have that kind of illuminate the live stream. I think that's the next step for this podcast.
That sounds next level.
I think, actually, now that I'm, like, sometimes I say things on this podcast, I'm like, oh, we're going to do this. And now I'm like, wait, that's a thing we should actually do.
That would be so cool.
So now that you have done that video, do you see yourself, you know, kind of spearheading more of your visual elements? Or is that kind of like oh, that was cool to do one time? Or
It's definitely motivated me in that way, because I had so much fun doing that. But I do have a video coming out in April for Cellophane, which is the single I'm going to put out this month.
Okay.
And we had so much fun shooting it. I had done a shoot with Brandon earlier, and then we had this, like, scheduling mishap where we only had 3 hours to shoot the video.
Right.
So I actually had to reshoot it with my other friend, Sarah, and figure out with very little budget how to make, you know, the colors and everything happen. So we built a set out of papier-mâché. We built a 1950s kitchen out of papier-mâché with the set designer whose name is Olivia.
That's amazing.
It's going to be so exciting. I can't even express how excited I am for it. It's going to be fun.
But it's amazing how much you can accomplish with limited means now.
Yeah.
If you're really creative, if you're very resourceful. I listen to a lot of filmmaking podcasts, because when I am listening to a podcast, I want it to be about something that I don't do.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be like, okay, I'm going to turn my brain off and, like, listen to somebody else's creative process. Or I'll listen to, like, food podcasts and things like that. But I listen to a lot of filmmaker podcasts, and I hear so many, like, you know, indie directors, you know, filmmakers who do, like, you know, little independent shorts, like, those kind of things. Not the, like, Michael Bays of the world. And they talk about just, like, how they get things done on this, like, shoestring budget with a minimal skeleton crew, and they still put something really cool together.
Yeah.
I always think that that's such a, like, really awesome kind of just concept,
yeah,
you know, to really activate on such a DIY level.
I definitely agree. My friend Joe, who is in the band with me, he's one of his favorite groups is called Clipping, and mm-hmm. for one of their records, they had rules that they set in place before they got into writing or whatever, because it forces you to think in a box, which kind of makes you think outside of your normal box
sure.
at the same time. So, yeah.
Nice. And so you said that there's a new single, Cellophane, coming this month in March?
Yes, it's coming March 30th. That's our trajectory date, but everything's looking good. I just have to pick the album artwork.
Is it going to be just one song? Is it like, does it have a B-side? Or is it part of a larger thing? Or are you just kind of doing these like one-off singles for right now?
I've been working on an EP with Max, who did Rico Acid and Blackberries, for mm-hmm. months for so long, it feels like. And we've just been putting together these songs. So Cellophane is the first of many. Mm-hmm. And we plan to do a video for each song.
That's awesome.
So it's quite an undertaking, but I think we were listening to the music and we're like, there's no way that we can't, or that we won't have a video for this, because it's so visual the way that we like,
yeah,
you know.
Well, I can't wait to see that. I mean, just based off the Rico Acid video, it's like that, again, is really visually striking. So there's a lot of other things you do as well. So just in no order, there was a track you did. Let me scroll through my notes here. And it's really a stunning song. Empower, in parentheses, We Grow. So that's a track you did with like Yomi, Rick Wilson, and like a staggering list of other talents. So talk about that song and kind of collaborating on a level where there's that many people involved.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I started with the hook.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really think very much of it. I just had this message that I wanted to get across. And then the Las Vegas shooting happened.
Yeah.
And the rest of the song just came immediately because I was, like, so overwhelmed by how unacceptable that is. And, you know, I was thinking how amazing the community in Chicago is. And just, I posted on Instagram, does anyone want to, you know, make this?
And, I mean, again, like, if you look on the Bandcamp, if you look on the Emily Blue Bandcamp with that song, there's, I'm guessing, maybe, like, 13 collaborators.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It's, like, it's a long list.
Yeah, there's a lot of collaboration. Gemtree has a pretty long verse on the song, and it's amazing. And we have Cello from Moonrise Nation, which is mm-hmm. a band that I'm friends with. I'm trying to, like, think of all this stuff. Emily Nichols from Carlisle and mm-hmm. Blue Park. I admire her quite a bit. I was happy to have all these people.
Yeah, it looks like... And it wasn't one of these, like, forced weird collaborations where everyone has, like, a verse and it doesn't blend together. Like, it really works very, very well, you know. And then something else you did, I think, in the last year and a half, is you did a project with Yomi, that harpist we just had on the podcast last week. Is that still an active thing, or was that a one-time thing? Or talk about your work with Yomi.
We have two songs recorded, and then... like, a few more songs written that we want to record, but as solo artists, you know, it's kind of hard to manage a bunch of projects, so
sure.
There's no set date for when those will happen, but I definitely hope that they still do, because it's always amazing to work with someone that you love. You
yeah, know? And she's super talented.
Yeah.
Her work's really good.
Definitely.
So, okay, so and I think we're covering a lot of the music stuff, but again, let me know if we're leaving something out, because I wanted to transition into something you told me that I didn't know about before the mics were on, that you are a host at Audio Tree.
Yes.
Talk about what your role is there and how did that develop? How did that come together?
I pretty much do what you're doing right now.
So there you go.
Except for I'm more awkward and
no, I'm
have
sure
less
right.
of a rhythm to it.
I've done this for 75 years. That's the only reason I'm even halfway decent at it.
Yeah, I feel like, well, some of the sessions... if you're interested, humans of Earth that are watching, you can find me doing these sessions. And some of them are horribly awkward. And some of them are really, really fun. Like the one that I did with this band called Mom Jeans.
Yeah,
it just
yeah.
was so smooth and felt really natural. And then my first Audio Tree session, the band gave me a sausage on the air. And I was like, well, thank you. And there's this like picture of me with the sausage. But yeah,
weird.
It's a really cool job. I'm grateful to work in the place that I've recorded before.
Yeah.
I feel really comfortable. Like, it gives me a sense of purpose. And my coworkers are all amazing. So,
again,
yeah.
Everything I ever hear about working with, like, Shubas Lincoln Hall, it just sounds like an awesome...
It
you
is.
Know, Shubas Lincoln Hall Audio Tree. It just
yes.
sounds like an awesome family over there. We've had a lot of contributors on this podcast who have, in the past, worked with Shubas Lincoln Hall or currently work with Shubas Lincoln Hall. And, again, it just sounds like... a great space. I did a couple shows there, God, like 11 years ago, so long time ago. But I mean, Shubas Lincoln Hall is a great space. And so how did you kind of come across that gig? Like, how did that come together?
Well, I recorded an album there with Terra Terra,
mm-hmm.
and we just existed there for a whole summer, basically.
Oh, okay. So you were just there all the time?
All the time,
somebody
yeah.
was like, do you want to start doing some interviews, or was that your idea?
I was like, hey, I would like to permanently live in Chicago. Can you please hire me?
I love it.
So,
that's the
know,
direct
approach.
You just
got to ask for what you want. Sometimes people will give it to you, and sometimes they won't, and that's okay, too.
No, it's very true. It's like that. It's kind of like Yeah, I was going to make like a nerdy comic reference. It's like a Peter Parker kind of thing, just like, holy shit, I need money to live, so please pay me.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, but that's really valid.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you're doing that with Audio Tree. You're recording music under your own name. You have all these collaborations. Like, not that that's not enough, but I want to make sure we're not leaving anything out. Like, what else is on deck for you in 2018 in case we missed anything?
So, let me see. I got to summarize in my head. We got the Cellophane coming out this month, Cellophane video next month, some super secret songs to follow.
Sure.
So Max's stage name is Pelican Boy, so
okay.
Our operation, we call it Blue Pelican. So the Blue Pelican EP is
nice.
Coming. And then I'm also working on an EP with my friend Joe, who is in my band, and Fay Ray, which is another Chicago band. And that's like darker, more... I don't know how to describe it. It's more serious music.
Okay. All right.
Because my music that I make with Max is humorous in a way and very, like, wacky.
Right.
Which I think is amazing for me to have that opportunity because Terra Terra was also very serious.
Nice.
You know what I mean?
So you're flexing a lot of creative muscles right now.
Yeah, I just really want to make things. And I want to do it as best I can, so...
And you're doing cool stuff.
Yeah.
So you got film, you've got, you've got the videos you're directing, you've got music, you've got Audio Tree, you got your collaborations, you're doing the work, man.
I've been pretty busy, yeah, but Sarah directed Cellophane. I don't want to take credit for that one because she's killing it.
And so, kind of final question, and I should say this, like, and I always mean it when I say this, this podcast has been going on a long time. We love bringing people back as they have new developments in their career. So please, I would love to view this as kind of like part one of an ongoing discussion as you have new things going on. But, now that you're in Chicago, now that you're active as kind of a full-time artist and creative, you're working in that space, like, how does that feel? Coming from Champaign and then coming from being really shy as a teenager and not letting anyone hear your music, how does it feel to be at this point now?
It feels amazing and overwhelming, both positively and negatively, because I think the thing I struggle with the most is still my self-confidence. It's not that I don't have a community, and it's not that, like, people don't believe in me. It's just that sometimes I don't believe in myself. So last night, for example, or last night, I had a show at HVAC, and there was a moment where I just, like, realized that I was on stage, you know?
Sure.
And I was like, oh my God, what if I look stupid? You know? But that's it. And I think that I'm proud of myself for doing it this long and working through those feelings because those are natural feelings.
Everybody has that.
I think everybody does.
Absolutely.
We don't talk about it at all, but everybody does.
No, and I think that's a good point. It is important to recognize that, like, everybody just shows up to whatever they're doing and it's just like, I hope this works.
I know. That's my whole entire philosophy is just do it anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. You just show up and you do it. And then if there's something that you're like, oh, that could have gone better, that just means you do it better next time. And if it works, you're like, great, I showed up and I did it.
Yeah, that's so true. My friend was like, even professionals make mistakes. Like,
everybody's their own worst, harshest critic.
It's so true. But I think, to go back to your question, my feeling overall is just gratitude, because I'm working really hard, and I have a really strong support network that I wouldn't be able to do anything without them. So I'm really grateful to be here.
That's awesome, man. I love it. It's a really positive story. I love the music. I love the videos. I think they're really cool. And I'm excited to see what you do next.
Me too. I hope it's good.
It will be. It will be. And the important thing is you're doing it. Where can people find your music? How can they follow you on social? Like, give you the URLs.
They can find me at emilybluemusic.com. You can find all my stuff on Spotify, and that way I get paid, so.
There you go. And this podcast, Dynasty Podcast, just arrived on Spotify. And then they took us off. Spotify just added Dynasty Podcast. So if you search Dynasty Podcast Chicagoverse, you'll be able to find this interview. And the cool thing is, I love this. If you search any of the artists we've talked to in the last kind of 2 years since we rebooted the podcast from our anniversary, a 10-year anniversary, like, the podcast will show up in artist results. So if you search, like, Emily Blue, this will show up in your results along with your music.
Awesome.
Yeah, I love it. So, right on, Emily Blue, I'm really glad we got to start this conversation. Thank you so much for coming up. You're welcome to hang during Drea's interview if you'd like, and we'll keep this going in the future.
Thank you so much.
Awesome, man.
Yeah.
You've been listening to a production of Dynasty Podcasts. Find more Dynasty Podcasts at dynastypodcast.com. For the Dynamic Dynasty, Dynasty Descend.